why do any of us not do things sooner is probably fear.
I couldn't let myself let go enough to make work that was interesting to me and interesting to other people.
There was a lot of anxiety and a lot of like stress that I was constantly like having to navigate through, which was hard for me, so.
Hey everybody, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show is about commercial art, making a good living, and making great art. Let's dig into that idea together. Thanks to our syndicate Illustration Age, you can find this show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Your next season is looking busier than the last. Take something off your plate by putting Factor Meals onto your plate. Eliminating extra decisions can free up brain power for other things like self-care and creativity, and Factor Meals makes eating well streamlined with always fresh, never frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready in just 2 minutes. They have a weekly menu of over 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go, lunches, snacks, and beverages. I like their little vitamin-y shots. They're tasty. I like the spicy one. Head to factormeals.com/peptalk50 and use code peptalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code peptalk50 at factormeals.com/peptalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. Today we have a super special episode that we recorded live on stage at the Creative Works Conference. It was an absolute great time. The whole conference was amazing. Josh Horton, who puts that conference on down in Memphis, is just such a sweetheart. I love that guy. Love you, Josh, if you're listening. He is a good dude doing amazing things for the design and illustration community. I genuinely love Creative Works because, for me, when I think of Creative Works, I think about three things. I think about excellence. The speakers are the top-notch speakers. I think about diversity, because I know that's a core value of the conference, of getting all kinds of different types of people together for the greater good, and that is something I really believe in. And I also think about vulnerability. I think about I know Josh thinks this is super important. I know that we align because we both believe that while it's important to be excellent, it's also important to be true to yourself and be open to talking about your feelings. So I always feel like super warm and fuzzy on the way home from Creative Works, and it was such a great time. Thanks for having me out, Josh. Before we jump into the episode, I just want to say some nice things about these three guests, because they are people who I just absolutely adore. First, we have Tad Carpenter. He's been on the show before. You know, I just want to say, first of all, thank you, Tad, because early in my career, you know, when I graduated 08 and, you know, probably around 09, Tad was like a virtual mentor for me. He answered lots of questions, encouraged me, said great things about my work, included me in one of his gallery shows, and, you know, I honestly would not be where I am now had it not been for all the kind things that he did for me early on when I was just a young buck trying to get my feet wet in this illustration and design world. And so, you know, Tad is just the sweetest person. He is hilarious. He has got so much energy. He's insanely prolific. And man, I just cannot wait to see what is on the horizon for his design studio. It's so fantastic. Thank you, Tad, for doing the show. Then we have Tuesday. Oh my gosh, what can I say about Tuesday? This is one of the funniest people that I've ever met, and you know, she has such a strong sense of herself, which I completely respect and look up to. And while she is super strong as a person, she's also really comfortable being vulnerable and honest about things. I completely look up to her for her ability to be herself, tap into that in her work, and as a business person. I am so inspired by all the things that Tuesday is doing. So go check her out, Tuesday Bassin. Last but not least, we have Alex Medina. This guy is a complete champ, and oh my gosh, he is just like one of the most friendly people I've ever met. It was an amazing experience to get to hang out with him. He's done phenomenal work, and he was so humble and honest, and yeah, it was just a thrill to get to chat with him, and I know that you're going to appreciate all of the great things that he has to say. Alex, thank you so much for being on the show. You are awesome, buddy. Hope to get to hang out with you again soon. All right, let's jump in. Be aware this episode features some explicit language.
This next guest and this next guest is amazing guy, super good friend. I was introduced to him last year from Brandon Reich. They both live up in Ohio, and we had porch beers after the conference last year. It was the best thing ever. He's like a brother from another mother. He has some severe attention and deficit disorder stuff like I do. So like we finish each other's sentences and it gets awkward, and but he's incredibly encouraging. And you guys, anyone here listening to the podcast? Hey, he's giving me grief from backstage. Podcast listeners, awesome. He is super encouraging, right? He helps me understand that I'm not alone, that there's someone out there that's just like me, who's smarter than me, who's working harder than I am. And he helps me do that every time I listen. So he's also here to help those of you in the room that are commercial artists build a better business. So you guys have heard so much from Andy. We're so happy to have him back in Memphis. Let's give him a big round of applause to Andy J. Miller.
Hi. Hey, buddy. Welcome. You're great. Thanks. Hello, everybody. Okay. That wasn't a very encouraging intro for me. I do have ADHD. Anyway, thanks for coming out. I feel like I've been on stage too much already, but I'm here again. So I have my MFBA class here, so give them a giant round of applause. They are amazing. It has been the coolest thing ever to hang out with them and eat pizza. We really did eat pizza. It was really fun. I did walk out the door with pizza. I ate too much pizza. So I don't really know how to say what I want to say for the first time. And but wait, one thing that I do want to say is thanks to anyone here that listens to the podcast. It means a lot to me, and all the wonderful, nice things that you've sent me. Someone sent me a box of chocolates. Wow. It blew my mind. I don't know why they did that. But I don't really know how else to say it other than this, and let's just start with this.
Feel the water flowing, feel it coming, feel it going, in the river, in the rain, or in the sky. One day it's an ocean, one day ice in motion, one day it's a teardrop in your eye. Once I wasn't here, and then I suddenly appeared, and now I seem to be at home in earth and air. Just like water flowing, I know where I'm going. Look beneath your boots and I'll be there. It's just a dream away. You've got to leave to stay. We'll meet again someday. Just a dream away.
So... So you know what I mean. So that song, I don't know if you caught the lyrics to it, but it's about him talking about it, the fact that he's going to die. And it was on Fraggle Rock. And that, it was my favorite episode. I don't know what was wrong with me. But did you see him stirring that mud? That's Mudwell the Mud Bunny. And he, am I okay? Is this going? All right. And he's stirring the mud. And at some point, he says that the time has come. The mud is ready. And it means that he's going to die. And I don't have anything serious to say about that other than you got to know when the mud is ready. And it doesn't. That's totally unintentional. I don't mean you need to know. This is like going really weirdly. But I don't mean that you need to know when it's time to die. Because the thing is that he is reincarnated as another creature in the episode. And that creature still knows the song. So anyway, this episode of the podcast is going to be about transitions, and I'm a big fan of transitions because I like new things a little bit too much. Like Andrew, my wife said I'm not allowed to do any more new projects, so that's why I keep doing the podcast, because I'm not allowed to do anything else. I have to stick at it. And so I think it's really important as a creative person and in your creative career to be aware of the moment that you're in the life cycle of a project, in the life cycle of the job that you're working at. You know, there's a lot of times in my life where the fruit was ripe and it was ready to harvest, ready to eat, go all in, and all I was thinking about was planting another tree. And then there were a lot of times when the fruit had gone bad. It had gone bad in the bowl, and I was still trying to like nibble at it, but it was like making me sick. I'm like going really deep into that analogy, but you have to know the difference between the time when the fruit's ripe and you need to be focused and you need to harvest in that moment, and the time that you need to be planting so you're ready for the next season. And so today, I thought I could talk to some of my friends that have been going through big transitions and just kind of poke their heads about what that looks like, how they burst through those big decisions, and hopefully there'll be something to take away. So I don't know if this is true, but I might have chose this topic just so I could show you that video. I'm not kidding. All right. Tad, will you join me? This is going to be like a creative relay race. There he is. Okay.
Hello, buddy. How are you?
There's your snacks. We have Sour Patch Kids. This episode
it's great.
Sponsored.
Well, you know, it's like you're having me to your home.
Yeah.
I think it's really rude not to bring gifts. I should have been to somebody. So I brought you a bunch of
snacks. Oh, thank you.
Anybody else hungry? Anybody want some chips or anything?
All right. Woo! I brought you that one to an empty chair. Andrew.
Cheetos. Starburst. please. If you look hungry, if you got anybody, you guys are hungry too. The green room of creative work. Go, buddy. Yeah. This is gonna be fun. We talk about death, and now we eat snacks.
Yeah, that's usually what I do.
Oh, man,
I think Tuesday can come out now. Not really. Don't send her out. I was just.
I'm done.
Yeah, I think you've done enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just recently went through a major transition, one that frightens me to hell. The idea of having employees and growing and all that. Before I go into that, I wanted to ask you, what's your workout routine?
Starburst to mouth, Skittle to mouth. No, I don't have a. For me, with exercise, I don't know if you guys feel this way, like, we sit so damn much, like, all the time, that physical activity, for me, is, like, the greatest, like, I don't meditate or, like, do anything like that, which I would love to try to learn how, but, like, it's just, like, such a great, like, grounding that, like, I don't have to think about anything. I can just, like, go and run and sweat and, like, do whatever, and it puts me in such a great, like, mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, a lot of designers, we run on with a lot of stress, probably, like, trying to create something that hasn't been done before and, like, something to make sure our clients are happy and excited about. Just the fact that, like, you can kind of, it's like a reset button for me, just to go and do something active. It doesn't have to be running. It can be, you know, playing a game, go to the park, walk around the block, you know?
Yeah.
I'm hell, walk up and down the stairs to your office. I don't know. You know, just something to get the blood moving and focus on something else, you know?
Right.
Someone was asking last night, talking about, like, you know, what do you do when you hit a creative roadblock, or, you know, which people always ask, right? And for me, like, going and doing something entirely non-design related, and maybe that's some physical activity, you know? And I also, I love really bad food.
Yeah.
Like unhealthy about how
Me too.
I'm unhealthy about how much I love unhealthiness, like, you know? And, like, I love Skittles and, like, Doritos and, like, stuff like that. And I'm afraid if I didn't, like, do a little physical activity, like, I'm gonna die, like, really young. Like, you know, it's like I'm just injecting, like, barbecue sauce and gravy into my body most of the time, you know?
Maybe we should change the theme to death.
Yeah. This is, like, the darkest pep talk ever.
Oh my gosh. And so, on to serious notes, are there, like, protein bars too that you do? And all right, we'll move on. All right. Sorry. Could you just tell us the story? I know some people were here, a lot of you guys were probably here for his talk, but I wanted to hear just a little bit in more detail what it was like to start thinking about going from solo to more of a shop.
Sure. And yeah, it was something that my wife and I had always kind of dreamed about. I met my wife in college, in art school as designers, and like all love stories, I was like, just thought she was the most beautiful thing in the world. She had zero interest in me at all, so I had to trick her into going out with me, and eventually trick her into marrying me.
Yeah.
And again, jokes on her for the rest of her life. So, no, we always kind of knew we wanted to do that, and my wife landed an amazing job right out of college, working for one of her heroes, which is Ann Willoughby and Willoughby Design, who I have so much respect for. And she got to work and learn so much there. I think if she wasn't working at that studio with so much prestige and with an icon like Ann, I think we probably would have done it a lot sooner. Mm. But Jess was learning so much, and it was just a wonderful environment. And so we knew we wanted to do that. But between me and you, Andy, my wife would come home at night, and I'd be like, babe, I'm freaking out. I'm drowning. I need your help tonight. You know what I mean? Or
yeah.
It's Saturday. We got to work all day, you know? And it got to a point, and it was about a year and a half ago, and my wife's way more smarter than I am. Mm. Way more smarter? Is that even a good phrase? I don't know.
That was proof.
That's a perfect example. Exactly. And, she was very much like, you know what, Tad? I'm pulling the trigger. I think it is time that we finally do what we've always wanted to do. We can't continue to live like this, where I'm working all night, you're working all night, we're working all weekends, we're neglecting, you know, life.
Yeah.
And so we did, and which was great. And then within, it was a very lucky circumstance. Within a month of her coming on board, we landed the largest project that either of us have ever worked on, which was the Boulevard Brewery experience that we've been designing for the past year and a half. And that never could have happened if she wouldn't have been willing to partner with me and, and join me and then be able to start to add people to help us on our team. That project means a lot to us for a lot of different reasons, you know? And like any partnership, like my wife would be here saying the same thing. Like that first few months we worked together, we've been working together in some capacity our whole life, you know, that we've known each other. But that first couple months of being around each other as a married couple, 24 hours a day,
Oh my gosh,
that was eye opening, y'all. Like you're like, oh wow, did we make the right call here? Like, oh my goodness, you know. And like all problems in our marriage and probably most marriages, it was my fault. Like it was admittedly my fault.
Definitely,
it was like definitely my fault. Like I'm the squeaky wheel, you know. Like there's no doubt there. Yeah. But it was me being being weird about like, oh what. Why is she doing that right now? That's what I normally do. You know, like why, you know, but it's like, no, that's what, we're a team. We're here to conquer this together. You know, of course that's why. And when you figure that out and we finally get our legs under us, oh my God, I'm so thankful for it. And I enjoy it so darn much to be able to share something you love to do so much with the person that you love more than anybody else. For us, at least, has been amazing. And yeah, it's like, I feel like, your career is always a series of transitions, probably. You know, hopefully, you have to evolve with where your work and where.
Do you start getting bored?
I get bored really easy.
Yeah, me
absolutely.
Too.
And so that's, and for me also, and I'm sure other independent designers feel this way. And I also there's types of work that I want to participate in and make that sometimes is hard to do as a individual designer. And the fact that you can then now have a group of people that you can lean on and you can take on more and tackle more things and hopefully make a, you know, a bigger impact as a designer, hopefully, you know? And that's really special and that's really cool.
So you said that you regret not doing it sooner a little bit. Why do you think, what was stopping you from doing it sooner?
Why do any of us not do things sooner is probably fear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons why we can get down to the logistics of running a business, right? You know, and it's like, oh, it was wonderful that we were able to get our insurance through my wife's company. You know what I mean? It was wonderful that you knew that paycheck was always going to be there. You know what I mean? So on and so forth, you know? As I mentioned just a second ago, like it had a lot to do with the fact that my wife was working for Ann Willoughby, you know what I mean? Who's, you know, like Milton Glaser's best friend, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's amazing. Like, and we still have a great relationship with Ann. And eventually, you know, to be honest, I remember Ann Willoughby gave me advice one night when we were, you know, like at her house having drinks or like whatever. And I remember her telling me a story about why she created Willoughby. And she was an illustrator on her own in the 70s as a woman and had a hard time getting loans, had a hard time getting an office at that time and things. And she eventually started bringing people on as her team to see if she could do greater work that way. And eventually she said, you know, I realized that I will not be able to do the type of work I want alone. You reach a peak eventually as an individual designer sometimes. And to continue to do greater work, I needed to add more people to my team. And eventually, you just have to know when that time is. And I remember telling me that, and I was like, oh, man, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like, that's really interesting. So I think just being around that was a lot of reasons why. There's always hesitation. But now, I mean, when I first got out of college, I worked for a small design firm, and I wish I would have left a year before I left that to go out on my own. I wish my wife and I would have started what we did probably a year before we did. But to me, I would always want to wait maybe a year longer than jump too soon and maybe fall and then, you know, not be able to do it again, you know?
Yeah.
I like to be prepared.
I do think, like, going to, like, breaking point with stuff like that it usually is a good call. And I know, I think one of the reasons transitions are so hard is that there's always a form of loss when you're moving to a different stage. And I think it's hard to let go. I think it's easy to let go of a bad season.
Right.
It's hard to go sometimes from good to great because you're going to lose things. And I wondered if you were afraid, what were you afraid of losing from doing the solo thing to being more of a shop?
Well, and like our business is, and I think you experience this, Andy, and I know there's a lot of you designers here that we've talked feel this way too. Like sometimes like people are coming to you because they want something very specific that you do and that you make, you know? And still to this day, we deal with that, and I worry about that sometimes. You know, it's like, oh, like, are they coming to me because they want something like X? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. But now we can offer you, you know, A, B, C, Y, Z also. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's always was like, oh, my gosh, is this like a horrible, like, idea? Like, it's like half of our business is, you know, we do illustration work, we do lots of traditional graphic design and brand identity work, and you know, where and how do we make sure that that is still seen, that we do offer all of that eventually? Mm. You know, and we're like so behind the eight ball, man. Like my wife's been there like a year, we've been doing this like a year and a half, we haven't formally even announced that we're like working together.
Yeah.
Our new website was designed like over a year ago. Yeah. We ain't even got that thing off the page, man. Yeah. Like, you know, like we just started like documenting everything, because it's like we got this crazy giant job, and then we're just like, we've just been buried on it, and like we can't share or get any of it out there, and we've just kind of both thrown our hands up in the air and be like, okay, maybe next month, okay, maybe after January, you know.
Was
maybe.
That Boulevard job both like a, did it feel like a sign from the universe and like boot camp for your
oh
new
my God.
Thing?
Yeah. Like 100%. It was like, it felt so good that we never thought in a million years we would get the project, like a little insider info, you know, how it worked. Like,
yeah.
They came to us and with this idea of a project, and they'd seen a lot of the restaurant work and other interiors that we have done, and that's not designing a museum or an experience that one would walk through. So we were hired to do like a really, really intricate brainstorm exercise with their team, which, like in retrospect, was like totally a, like a, let's just see how these guys. It was like a first date that we could have very quickly been kicked out of the cab, you know, and
yeah.
like, you know, left. And it went really well, and then we signed on for the whole project after that. And it was an amazing boot camp. It was a lot of nights for that first like big project my wife and I got to work on. Of like, we were up like both like in tears, you know what I mean? Just because like, I can't do that. I don't know how to do. I can't design. I'm not an architect. You know, just like, oh, it was awful, you know.
Yeah.
But then eventually. It worked out, and we figured it out. And the fact that it was such a big project, and it was that first really big project that my wife and I were like 100% 50-50 collaborators on. And of course, other things were that way too, but nothing of this size. And in retrospect now, I'm like, I know exactly how we work together now. I know exactly what works and what doesn't, just based off of that, and unbelievably thankful for that.
Yeah, and without maybe, you know, be comfortable with your own personal level here, but were there any were there any like hard struggles, like specific things that were hard to navigate in this new like collaboration?
Were
there
about,
moments?
Like, weird relationship stuff?
I don't like, want to. You know, I'm not trying to.
It's like my mom on the other side of here. Like, when am I going to get grandbabies? Why don't you have any children yet?
Yeah,
you know?
I just mean, I think one of the things that happens with, like, everybody watched your talk last night and then went home and cried. And I think
my life's that depressing.
No, just like, well, we'll never do all of those things. That was it.
Bullshit.
Was like, no, seriously. Bullshit. Raise your hand if you felt that way.
No, you didn't.
You're like, Tad is amazing.
Podcast,
oh my
one
God.
Guy raised his hand.
That is not true. But I just wonder, like, you know, on the flip side, I like what you said about coming home and feeling so overbooked and just like having so much. Were there times even in that big project where you were looking at each other like, what the hell are we going to do?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And that's when we started trying to rely on some of the designers that are working with us, whether they're the part-time people or people that we can bring in on a larger scale. And yeah, we absolutely were overwhelmed. I don't know about you guys. Still to this day, when that email comes in of a new project and you're looking at that blank paper or you're looking at whatever it is, however it is you start, I am terrified every single time. Every single time. But I hope that fear never goes away. Because if that fear does go away, I think I'm going to start mailing some shit in. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
True.
Like,
yeah,
for real.
Yeah. Yep.
But the fact that you have, that fear is a great motivator. And I am fine with that. And I am good with that. And I look forward to that fear, you know? And this project was incredibly terrifying because we hadn't done dimensional experience-based things before. And we had to figure it out.
Yep.
And then we started to dive into even like little mini architecture-based things, like having to figure out little semi-rooms that things could occur in.
Mm.
And we don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful my wife Jessica is actually really talented and can think that way really, really, really successfully. And then we were able to then partner with an architect to help us make sure, like, you know, walls don't fall down and kill people and, like, things like that that we obviously don't know about.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely, so much fear all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and that was a good example of it.
Do you have, the last question I have for you is, do you have any advice for people that are thinking of going from one person to hiring people or becoming a shop?
I mean, I think my, and I can only speak in our relationship, but, like, to me, with a partnership, it's about finding somebody you trust and somebody that you really, really know will always have your back. That's important to me. I even talked about it a little last night, you know, early on in my career, I was partners with my best buddy, Dan Padovic, with Valhalla Studios, and we were doing tons and tons of posters and stuff. I partnered with him because he's one of my best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always going to have his back. He's always going to have mine. And I'm not involved in that business anymore, really. But I'm, like, always going to be kind of like a silent partner, you know? He runs that shop. I'm no longer involved. But, like, let's be real, guys. He takes real good care of me and all my stuff, man. You know what I mean? And I will always scream from the heavens on how great he is and how important he is to me and what we do. You know, that's a partnership. That was important to me. He's a good friend. The next person I'm partnering with is my wife. Like, you know what I mean? To me, finding that good fit for who it is you want to partner with, making sure you really know them. I mean, like, Dan and me have known each other since high school, you know? My wife and I haven't been together for 13 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just, like, a little slow to the go, I guess. Maybe a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But I think who you partner with is so unbelievably important as kind of a groundwork.
I think that's totally true. And knowing that you went through a transition with Dan, too.
Absolutely.
Being able to trust them through that. I think it's such a difficult thing. Creative work especially, I always find when you're doing collaborations, it's good to know someone well enough to help each other work through the ego.
Absolutely.
There's so much ego when you're doing creative work, and when you're really close, that can, like,
And hopefully, I mean, to me, with my friends, or, you know, Dan or my wife Jessica, or just other friends I do work with, you know, for fun sometimes, mm-hmm. it's like, I would hope that the ego doesn't come too much into play, because it's somebody I truly, truly respect. And know that they're going to do great work, and know that they're going to respect me.
Yep.
And it's like, why would I, like, I mean, at the end of the day, like, the ego thing drives me crazy.
You know? I know.
In the day, like, we're not curing cancer, y'all.
True.
Design is unbelievably important, and it can do some amazing things for for all of us. But my gosh, we are so lucky to be able to do this, and that kind of stuff can be checked at the door. I mean, like, it's kind of
weird. I feel
you. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Well, can you guys give him a round of applause?
Oh, yeah. Is that it, man?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you, buddy. Tuesday? Sour Patches?
Let me clean up. Anybody have any trash yet?
You're so helpful.
Hey, man, we all gotta do our part here for creative work.
That's right. Very sweet. See ya. This whole
reception—that's crazy.
This whole podcast is just like a ruse to. There's no microphones. I just like to, you know, get these people I'm desperate to talk to, and pretend like we're recording. So, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Okay. I'm kind of regretting starting with such like a downer question. Yeah, but well, that's what I planned. So.
Let's go. Let's get this over with.
I met you in 2014 back at Icon in Portland,
mm-hmm.
and I remember I felt like both of us were in a really weird zone mm-hmm. for lots of different reasons, and then we met up again in this year at Icon, mm-hmm. and you just seemed like a different person completely. Just energy and emotionally and just everything. And I wondered if you could just describe back then when you were living in NYC, what was going on, where you were at with your career and then just as a person.
Sure. Well, I touched on this a little bit in my talk yesterday, but I felt so preoccupied with making ends meet when I lived in New York that I couldn't let myself let go enough to make work that was interesting to me and interesting to other people and making stuff that pushed the envelope in any way, because I was like, if I push the envelope, I might not be able to afford rent, so I shouldn't, you know? And around the time when I saw you, I had, you know, kind of reached a breaking point in, like, early that year, probably around, like, March, where I was just like, I hate my boyfriend, I hate my job, I hate the work I'm making, I live 5 feet from the elevated expressway, my building shakes every time a semi-truck goes by, which is not a good place. And I had visited Los Angeles, and just on a whim, and within like 3 hours of moving there, or visiting there, I decided I needed to move there. And when I had met you, I was in a transitional state. I'd just broken up with my boyfriend, and that was harder than I had imagined it would be. And I, you know, had known that I needed to move away from New York, and I wanted to move to LA, but it's a big leap, and I was really kind of gathering up the courage to do that when I saw you in Portland, and I knew it was something I needed to do, but it was hard for me to say confidently, like, yes, I'm going. No, I don't know anywhere, like, anyone there. No, I don't know what I'm going to do, but this is where I need to be, you know? Because there are so many people that were like, you're not that dumb. Why are you going if you don't know anybody? I swear to God. Many people said that. And there's also... there's also this weird mindset in New York where when you're there, you feel like the whole world loves New York. And everything revolves around being in New York. And I felt like if I left, it would be the end of my career as I knew it. But around that time, I decided that I just didn't care. If that was the end of my career, then fuck it. I just like couldn't live life like that anymore. And yeah, I feel like I was kind of getting the guts to do what I needed to do when I met you.
And I feel like it seems like LA has been such a massive thing for you in your career and just as a person. And I wonder if you could just elaborate, just for my own weird, like, universal theories, whether you could elaborate on what got you to visit there in the first place.
Well, I want to hear more about these universal theories.
No, you don't.
Well, what got me to visit there in the first place...
It's really hard to move on from that.
It's like, it sounds kind of pretentious, but I wanted to go to this Danish punk festival. it's like so obscure, but I wanted to go, so if I'm being truthful. And I found some cheap tickets online and was just like, why not, you know? I had never been to Los Angeles before. I had rarely been on the West Coast at all. I grew up in Nebraska and then went to school in Minneapolis and then moved to New York. And when I got to LA, I was like, it was like within 3 hours of getting there that I was like, this is it. This is where I've always wanted to live. I've never felt comfortable anywhere that I've lived before. I just feel so at peace here. Like, LA is this like weird, super bougie, dirty, nasty
She's selling
paradise.
It.
No, but I mean, it's like, LA is really interesting because I think that there is a place for everybody. You know, there's like very high, very low. And, you know, I think more than people realize, there's like a lot of like enmeshment that happens there. And yeah, I think it's really interesting to just like be in the most beautiful place, but it is like an urban setting. And so it is like dirty and there's like trash everywhere and it's like actively being used. And it's just fascinating. And I also feel like one thing that I love about Los Angeles is that it is so sprawling that there is no one predominant culture or a way of doing things in LA.
Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of people get away with stuff that maybe you couldn't get away with in other cities, like manufacturing things, starting your own venue. I just feel like there's a really exciting, like, electrical DIY buzz in the air where you're like, you know, you get pushed out of your space maybe, but there's always another space. Like, you, there's never going to be, like, the city will never, I mean, I guess never say never, but I don't think that the city could rise so high in price that it would squash out creatives, you know, because it's so vast. I think that's really special.
So would, first of all, can I just want to say something weird. I heard this theory. This isn't a question. I don't know where I'm going. Can I just share something?
All right. Is this a universal truth?
Yeah, it's a universal truth. There was this like medieval guy who, his theory, his number one theory was that the most important thing in your life is that you get the right geographic location for you. And so every time I think of your story, I think he was right.
Well, it's also that like
she just picked up on that. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much true.
Well, like the like Jewish saying, like change your place, change your luck. And I think that's true. Like if
dude,
you're just,
I like that.
Yeah. No, it's true. Because I feel like it's so easy to get stuck in a rut if you're just in like the same place and like something's not working, and so you're just like trying to accelerate out of something that's not working, but then you're just like making more of a hole for yourself, or at least for me, that was true. And I feel like by physically removing myself, I was kind of able to just do a whole new thing and have a new mindset.
Do you think that it's more important to try to find a place where you fit rather than trying to fit in?
I mean, fitting in is really overrated. I just think,
true.
You know, I just feel like if that's not, if you have to try so hard to fit in, it's just not going to work. And I don't think, even if it works temporarily, for me, it never feels like it's so hard to understand your own internal compass if you're not like paying attention to your needs or desires. And I think it can be really easy to be depressed or irritable if you're not even like checking in with yourself and like understanding what you need.
Yeah.
And I feel like by attempting to fit in, if that's not your vibe, then it's just hard to live your life in like an honest way to yourself.
And I also think like when, if you have to change yourself on like a core cellular level to achieve a particular goal, you're not going to be the person that enjoys success in that goal.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, if someone is feeling stuck creatively or in their career, what is the Tuesday advice?
I mean, I think that's such a hard question because it all comes down to what you're able to do. Like some people have the luxury of, you know, being able to like pick up and leave, and other people don't. For me, I didn't even really have that luxury. I didn't have any money to move, but I just sold everything so I could move to like free myself up. Like any like thrift store furniture or IKEA furniture I had gotten, I just sold, and anything that didn't fit in my car, I just left. So I felt like it was most important to me to just like, even if I was like dead broke when I started in LA, but had enough money for like my deposit and my first month rent, I was just going to figure it out because I was tired of waiting around for other people to give me the opportunities that I wanted. And for me personally, that's always been how I get out of a rut. I don't wait for somebody else to give me permission or even maybe the most responsible way to do things. I just know in my gut, or it, you know, maybe it takes me a while, but I know I have to do something. Like I feel it so intensely that I'm just like, I mean, I guess I'll like pack up my Honda and like peace out and just see where this takes me.
One of the things that, I've worked with a lot of college students, and I'm always encouraging them, if they don't have the responsibility of kids and a spouse and a mortgage and all this, and you're in your early 20s, like, I know you can do things that can put you in bad situations, but you on a regular basis took some pretty big, seemingly big risks that paid off in pretty big ways. And like, I don't know, I just feel like I don't even really know what the perceived risk is sometimes.
Well, I'm a really big fan of positive risk taking. Like, I think, you know, there's like, you know, inherently negative risks, like doing hard drugs. And like, you know, and like things that don't do drugs, do move across the country. No, but I think if you're moving forward with the intention of improving your life and you're taking risks that help you achieve that, then I don't even really see the risk. I mean, you know, I mean, I guess there's always a chance you could end up homeless, but for most people, I don't think that's the case. There are obviously people that are homeless and they get there somehow, but I just think it's important to take those risks and like not cling too tightly to like what you've been given. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you can take it upon yourself to break out of that mold a little bit.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for you guys. Thank you. Alex. I love how weird this is. Let's give him a round of applause. Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
What's up? This guy.
This guy.
I'm such a big fan of his work. So he's great.
Golly, this is not right. Okay. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Just catching up on my Trump Twitter. So it's been kind of crazy.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. Let's talk about that for a while. All right. So you did a talk, and we heard a little bit about it. I wanted to see if you could just do a recap, but go a little bit more into the details of what it looked like for you to go from like an in-house guy to an in-your-own-house guy.
For sure. And so me being at Reach was kind of unique because it was me, like for the last 10 years, me designing for my friends.
Yeah.
And so my friends owned the record label. And so I came on board as their creative director and designer and stuff like that. And so there was always that culture of just independent, like we're just trying to figure it all out and stuff. And so over the last year and a half, as things began to explode, like the culture of, I mean, the label and just my boys just began, it began to become more corporate and just more like a real record label as it should be run and stuff. And so a lot more pieces were added and a lot more people began to kind of like come into the picture and a lot more stakeholders and stuff. And so a lot of times, like, I would find myself with meetings with managers rather than my boys and stuff like that. And for me, as somebody that was very, very, like, just passionate and locked into that, I think that was hard for me to kind of, like, navigate through as well, too. And then another part of it, too, was I'm originally from New York City, and I've been away from home for, like, 6 years and stuff, and all our family's back there. And especially now where we have a kid, I think a lot of the decision-making was that, like, how do we... we're ready to transition back home. And then it got to a point where it was just like, all right, babe, I think it's time for us to kind of like transition and move and stuff like that and try to figure it all out. Yeah.
And you became a creative director and you were saying that your hand wasn't on the making.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I feel like that is a kind of a difficult situation for lots of the people in the room. Like at a certain point, the trajectory ends and, you know, within the corporate place. So, that seemed like it was like a big challenge for you, but go ahead.
I think it was a great like learning experience in terms of figuring out who I am as a person and what I want to do. And I think I was just like, hey, let me try this. I'll do this. Yeah, this role, I'll do it and stuff like that. And I think as the past year began to be refined, like I'm a designer. Like I love being like having my hands on things and making stuff and creating. If I could sit with my laptop and just make stuff for like the rest of my life, like I'm good.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not a people manager. And I think that's one of the things sometimes I began to be burnt out because I was put in a role. I was trying to be somebody that I'm not.
Did you figure that out like Was it obvious, or did it take reflection over time to figure out what was going on?
I think it took. I saw moments of that, but I think over time I began to realize like, wait, you know what? Because everybody was always like pushed me towards that role, like Alex, you're a great leader, you can do this, you can like people look up to you and stuff, but I'm like, it sucks the life out of me to be. Yeah. It's hard like to just like be there in that aspect, and I kind of like had to navigate through that and have honest conversations about myself and stuff, and maybe I may have that honestly to make that role of creative director may pay more or at a place, but I may not get that much money just being a designer and stuff like that, or a principal designer, but at the end of the day I need to be able to go home with like just
that fulfillment.
Exactly. That fulfillment, being intact of who I am as a person and be able like to not carry that. There was a lot of anxiety and a lot of like stress that I was constantly like having to navigate through, which was hard for me. So
What were the things that you were worried about before you jumped out?
Insurance.
Yeah. And that's not a joke, actually. I have 3 children. Do you know what my insurance is? You don't want to know. I'll tell you that. Holy
that,
crap.
I think, even like kind of like what Jason Maiden shared, like even like, man, like I won't be at the like Grammys, or I won't be at this, or
that's I don't understand that one, but yeah,
just like not being in it all and stuff like that, or at the studio and this, or I won't be. I think
like
that,
is there like an ego thing of like you're gonna lose out on the really cool stuff?
Yeah, and I think a part of it was my identity was so tied into it all, and feeling like what does life after Reach Records look like? And I've actually got like Twitter like comments like, hey, are
like
you okay?
Asking you that
question. Why'd you leave? Yeah, it's like, are you okay? Like I'm like, I'm fine, like, you know. But honestly, like, there was a part of that where it's just like, man, I am who I'm, like, I'm made who I am, a part of what I do, like, a part of the music I make, the part of the design, who I'm affiliated with and stuff like that, or who I'm approximated to, stuff like, no, like, I am a person of worth, I have value, like, I'm independent of whatever I do. And so that's it was a lot of soul searching and stuff like that. So thinking through that as well, too, was kind of.
And were you talking to your wife and other people about it at the same time?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And yeah, for sure. And I mean, even with Reach, I've been talking to them for a while about it too. As well, they're my friends, like friends. And so they're the people I talk to.
Yeah. And in the goal setting workshop, that was a weird one, but it was really good. And we talked a lot about detaching, your self-worth and your ego to your goal, and the goal really being more about the type of work that you want to be able to do. So what are the things that enable you to have the money to do the type of work that you want to be doing, less so about winning a Grammy, you know? So I love that. I have another question. What did you learn? Sorry. What did you learn in employment that changed the way? Because you were a freelancer before.
Yeah.
What did you learn in that employed role that changed the way that you're approaching self-employed this time?
Yeah, I think structure was like a good like a thing that. And honestly, even though like I'm not built to be a people manager, I needed to grow in that area in terms of how do I manage projects, how do I manage like different things. Because as a freelancer, it's just like I woke up and like just knocked stuff out and did my own like went back to bed or played it was so freestyle kind of, and it added a lot of structure. And also I think one of the important things for me is like I took advantage as much as possible of every relationship that I made and looked to maintain good relationships with everybody I came across with there, because when I went freelance, those are the same people that I like hit up like, hey, I'm freelancing now, if you need anything let me know, such and such. And so
And I think there's a lot of I always use the term young people. And I'm 30, so
yeah,
like the young people think that have all these expectations. If you've never been out on your own as a freelancer, you have all these expectations and dreams of what that life looks like. What are some of the false expectations that you could share? Like what do people think what freelancing is? What's the truth?
I think I was in. One of the things that I was like hit me face on was like
people seen my work. I expected people to know that my work was out there, or that job work was going to come in because they've seen my work, in a sense. And I'm like, and I had to realize, no, there's other designers have seen your work, not clients.
Right.
You understand? Like, and I think I never prepared myself for that, to be able to like to sell myself, because I was designing for my friends, and I was like, opportunities were there, and so I've never really had to like, all right, like, look what I'm like. What I'm doing. This is the work I'm doing. To prepare a portfolio. All of that stuff. And so that's kind of been the past like month or so. It's just like, how do I sell myself? How do I like begin to put myself in places where people can see my work and go back and email. I have a good friend named Joshua Rizzo, who's an illustrator as well too. And he's been a good like of soundboard to like. He was like, Alex, the first thing I did after I left Nike was I emailed 200 people and said, I'm available to design right now. Like, let him hit me up. And so I had to do that. I had to go back and do that as well too. So yeah. And also like, things weren't gonna just come. So how much work was gonna be in the front? So I wanna launch my apparel and my clothing line and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of front end work that needs to go, and a lot of equity, a lot of money that you need to put into that before you can kind of like just launch it. It's not like I was like, hey, I can design something, put it up on the internet, and it'll sell. Yeah. Or like, no, there's a lot of work and a lot of like things that go into that as well too. So it's been a learning process for sure.
So are you feeling a lot better having been out on your own, getting your hands dirty on the work again?
No, to be quite honest.
That's a good answer.
No, it's been hard. It's been tough. And I mean, work has come in for sure, and like bills have been paid and stuff like that. But I think there's a lot of in the freelance world for sure. Especially honestly, like this is the most like real thing. Like, I look at my son and I'm like, I need to keep providing for him. Like, I need to keep paying bills. I need to keep like bringing money in and stuff like that. And so even now, like talking through, like, man, like, I'm looking back to get a full-time job, like going back and like, get a full-time gig and stuff like that. I'm in the final stages of finalizing some stuff, but back home in New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, like honestly, like I was like, you know, I'll continue doing freelance in the meantime. But I think the way I'm wired and just like I get very anxious, like very easily, and just overwhelmed by things and stuff. And so it kind of affects me creatively.
Yeah.
Like if I'm like constantly like just stressed about things, like I don't feel like. Like I'm designing, or like it messes with me. And so kind of navigating through that. I'm not like the typical like, yeah, freelance, like
I went to
freelance and it's all good now. Like, nah, it's been work and it's been tough, but trying to figure it out.
I super appreciate that honesty, as I'm sure all of you do, because anybody that's been out on their own knows how frightening it can be, and especially when you have a mouth to feed, it can be insane. So I really, really appreciate that. I think the question that everybody is waiting to
I don't know what this question is. This is the surprise.
Which would you choose, Kendrick or Chance?
Ooh, that's hard.
Well, it's the pressure's on. So
I think Chance the Rapper. Here.
Which one's
that? I think Chance the Rapper is like, Kendrick has done, oh my gosh, Kendrick has been an important piece of like where we at now in hip hop. Mm-hmm. But Chance has been what Kanye was for me back in the day and stuff like that. And it re-inspired me to make music, inspired me to say, like, just see, like, he's doing something different in the industry. Like, he just put on his tour. I could go on a rant on
it. Please do. I'm having a great time.
He just had this his big show in Chicago where he brought out all these artists. And one of the important things, he was like, I wanted to build this so that all my homeboys can have work. I wanted to put the show on so I can put jobs for, I can create jobs for all my friends. So all his friends were running the show, running the lights, like, all of that, like him, the way he thinks about his platform and his art and how can he leverage it for the benefit of other people, like, hasn't been inspiring to me, like, as a creative, for sure. And so
he's definitely thought a lot about the business side.
Yeah. For sure.
That was the right answer.
Thank you.
I love Kendrick too, man. All right, last thing. Do you have any advice for people that are thinking about going freelance?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I wish I would have thought more of is have a 2-year plan before you jump ships and stuff like that. Or just like stay at your job, have two, like I would have said like 2 years ago, I would have been like, you know what, in 2 years I'm going to quit and start preparing and start establishing those relationships or even building your clientele before you made the jump. And I think that's important. I think that's important because a lot of times, like even myself, like I knew, although I definitely knew that I needed to make the shift, I wish I would have prepared more on the front end before I like jumped and stuff like that.
So one thing that you keep talking about that I think is super essential, especially now, is relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think we would love the idea that it's a meritocracy and that it's all about the quality of your work and that's how your business is built. And then especially in the age of the internet. I'm only 30. But I say things like the age of the internet. And but I have so many children. They've aged me. But I think that we get to that point where I meet so many students now, and I don't know if this is a new thing or not, that are so frightened about the idea of meeting people, like going out there and building those relationships. And I can tell you for sure that the most important work, the stuff that pays my bills on a regular basis, all comes from people I like, they like me, we like working together.
That's definitely true. And I think, I mean, even coming to conferences like this or even leveraging
Absolutely.
Social media. So like this last month, I applied to like 20 different like the design, art director roles, stuff like that. The two jobs that I'm like in the last stages of were through Twitter.
Right.
Like
yeah.
the VP of design of this place followed me on Twitter and then I jumped in those DMs and I was like, hey, I'm looking for a job. Like, what's up? Like, and he was like, oh yeah, I got the perfect gig for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and I, after sending like 20 resumes to the, like, again, like I think like building relationships has been a big part of just being able to find work and a lot of the work that I've been able to do. So.
I always think like good work is like the baseline. That's like the starting.
For sure. That gets you through the door.
For sure. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I really
appreciate
it.
Thank you so much.
Give him a round of applause.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
So good. All right. Thanks, buddy. All right. I forgot to plan a closing thing, but we'll wing it. I'll keep it short and sweet. Thank you guys so much for all the support. If you don't listen to Creative Pep Talk, go check it out if you enjoyed this and the Fraggle video. Thank you guys so much. I will, please, one last thing. If you are, if you're a fan of the podcast, please don't be intimidated by me. Like, look at my face. I look like a 7-year-old all the time. But come talk to me. Like, I love talking to all you guys. So, thanks, guys. What a completely lovely experience it was to hang out on stage with these people. I love these people. Thank you guys so much for doing that. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you, Josh, for making that happen. Guys, check out Creative Works next year. You're not going to regret it. I can guarantee it. It is such a good time. I had such a fantastic time doing workshops with you and hanging out with you and eating barbecue and eating burgers and pizza and having beer, and sounds like I had more fun eating and drinking than hanging out, but that's not true. I had a great time hanging and talking with all of you. I'm sorry to those who I talked their faces off. I have a tendency to do that. Okay, thanks guys. Stay in tune with your, I don't know where that sentence was going. I was just trying to run with it because I was excited to see where it was going to go, but it didn't end up going anywhere. all right, guys. Thanks to our syndicate, Illustration Age. You can find the show at illustrationage.com/creativepeptalk. Thanks to Yoni Wolf, his band Y, for our theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh and his band Metabari for all the other tunes. We love that stuff. Go check it out at soundcloud.com/metabari. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed this one. I will be back next week. Stay pepped up.